Free Speech Radio News is a worker-run collective. Monica Lopez and Trina Guse produced today's newscast. Leanne Caldwell is our Washington editor. Our technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley is Eric Klein, Antonio Ortiz, and Puck Lowe. For archives of this or any other newscast or documentary, go to our website, www.fsrn.org. From KPFA in Berkeley, I'm Brian Edwards Tiekert, sitting in for Out of Bogato.
And the time is 7 o'clock on the nose. You're listening to WBAI New York. It's time once again for Off the Hook. Everybody, the program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Mike.
Hi.
And Redbird, put all those papers away.
Ignore now. Good evening.
Lynn joins us.
Hello,
this
all.
Week. You haven't been here in a while?
No.
Bernie S. down there in Philadelphia?
Thank you.
Bernie, are you distracted by
something? Oh,
I'm
sorry.
I got a radio show going on here.
Yes, I'm here in Philadelphia.
No time for social niceties. Bernie joined us from Philadelphia. This is indeed a dark day, at least I think it is. Reading a story here that moved recently over Reuters. You may have heard of Reuters. It's a news service that...
British, no?
I'm not sure exactly. They broadcast from all over the place. Or they transmit or write stories. But they're reporting a story which I find incredibly disturbing. Merriam-Webster, the dictionary people, have named the word of the year. And the word of the year is the word woot. W-0-0-T. I am not kidding. It's an expression of joy coined by online gamers, and it was crowned Word of the Year yesterday by Merriam-Webster. It's like I'm in some kind of...
It's not going to actually appear in dictionary.
Bizarro world here. I don't know. I mean, I didn't think this would happen.
I think it has to if they named it Word of the Year. I think if you buy the dictionary, it'll probably be in there.
Well, how in the world do you list something that has numbers in it in a dictionary? You can't do that.
You list them before the letters, I guess.
So you put it right at the beginning. This is the first W word after W itself?
No, it would be...
W is not a word.
It's in the dictionary.
W is in the dictionary?
Yes.
I guess it would be...
It just says what? The
letter W.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, well, that's a waste of space right there. This is more of a waste of space. And it's the beginning of the end, I think, because now that they're going to do that, they're going to have to list elite in all its different spellings, and it's never going to end.
You could fill a whole book just with ways to spell 31337.
Whole books have been filled with this kind of nonsense. Anyway, the dictionary says it is like saying yay, Y-A-Y. This is all so good to know. It could be after a triumph or for no reason at all. I think that latter condition...
Oh, that's actually a really bad thing for them to say.
What, for no reason at all?
Yes.
Well, that's sort of the reason why they did this, I think, is for no reason at all. Okay, here's why. Here's why this happened, and that's not in the dictionary either. Visitors to the website, Merriam-Webster's website, were invited to vote for one of 20 words and phrases culled from the most frequently looked up words on the site and submitted by readers. Runner-up was... All right, you guys want to guess what the runner-up was? Assuming you don't already know. Go ahead, Mike.
Does it have any digits in it?
I'm not giving you any hints. You have to come up with something on
your own. If I can't get that hint, then I can't guess.
All right, Mike won't guess.
I have no idea.
You guys have no imagination
LOL.
Whatsoever. LOL, that's very good. Lynn, that's very good. Great guess. It's wrong, but it was a good guess. Bernie, what do you got? Bernie? I think Bernie's having a party someplace, and we don't rank on the list.
Okay.
All right. Well, when Bernie rejoins us, maybe he'll guess what it is. I'm just going to tell you, the runner-up word was Facebook.
What?
Yeah, Facebook.
It's not a word.
That's not a, it's,
well, woot is not a word either,
is it?
More
of a word than Facebook.
No, it's not. It's
proper
not a
noun,
word.
Sort of.
Well, it's not
some
a proper noun
have
here.
Turned it into a verb, but...
Anyway, a new verb meaning to add someone to a list of friends on the website Facebook.
Oh, it was listed as a verb.
Well, does that really matter? Yeah, it's listed as... If woot was a verb, too, it wouldn't make it any better. Merriam-Webster President John Morris resigned afterwards. He should have resigned afterwards, but he didn't. He said woot reflected the growing use of numeric keyboards to type words. People look for self-evident numeral letter substitutions, 0 for O, 3 for E, 7 for T, and 4 for A. This is simply a different and more efficient way of representing the alphabetical character.
Wait, more efficient?
It's also an express lane to illiteracy.
They can probably double the size of their dictionaries if they wanted to make those substitutions.
Of course, you could just print total gibberish and have an infinite book. I'm sure you could do that. One website, thinkgeek.com, already sells T-shirts with the word woot printed on the front. That was one of their crowning glories when they came up with that one. Woot belongs to gamers the world... Oh, I'm going to get hate mail. I know. How dare you criticize the word woot? From now on is going to have that word in it, but I don't care. I have to speak my mind.
I actually used to own that T-shirt.
Well, I can't imagine you walking around with a T-shirt that says woot.
Seen him wearing sillier things.
That's true. But then I spilled paint on it, so I guess I was ahead of the trend in rejecting this word.
Did you spill paint on it, or did you one day find that paint somehow got onto it?
No, I'm pretty aware of how the paint got on it.
Oh, okay. Well, then... Yes, Bernie, you're back. Welcome back. How's the party going?
Working late at the office here. I'm wondering what the folks at the Oxford English Dictionary have to say about this.
Well, I bet they don't say woot. I bet they say something of a negative sort that has numbers in it. Mm-hmm. I can't think that way. But anyway, Think Geek says woot belongs to gamers the world over. It seems to have been derived from the obsolete woot, W-H-O-O-T, which essentially... is another way to say hoot, which itself is a shout or derisive laugh.
I've only heard that coming from owls.
Others maintain that woot is a sound several players make while jumping like bunnies in Quake 3, referring to a popular video game.
What are its roots in Old English?
I'm getting to there. Online gamers often replace numbers and symbols with... it's not just online gamers. Anybody online does this. People in instant messaging, people on IRC...
Unnecessarily, on the computer.
Some people use that as part of their names because somebody already took the name spelling the traditional letters, so they use the numbers. I think that's one of the main reasons this is done. Online gamers often replace numbers and symbols with letters to form what Merriam-Webster calls an esoteric computer hacker language. Yeah, blame us for something else. And that's known as, of course, LeetSpeak. This translates in... L-3-3-T. And that translates into LEET, L-E-E-T.
So wait.
L-E-E-T, which is short for elite, oddly enough spelled E-L-I-T-E.
So in your railing against this, you just read L-3-3-T as LEET as though it were correct, even in the midst of a rant against such things.
And I also started off the story by saying woot was the word. It's, you know, obviously you can't pronounce the numbers, so you have to say it in a certain way, but I don't know. I think we're on a long downward spiral, and it's beginning right now.
I can see it as a special edition dictionary, but I can't see including it in the actual full-on Webster's dictionary.
You know, that would make me happy right there if they did that. Can you imagine your grandparents or relatives that aren't familiar with computers opening up the Merriam-Webster dictionary on a stormy night just to pass the time and coming across... a word like woot spelled with zeros, or a word like leet spelled with threes, I mean, their world would fall apart.
You know, they said...
Who finds this funny?
They said the same thing in the 19th century about huzzah.
No, I don't think they did. And I challenge you to go and find some records that have people as outraged as I am here tonight. I mean, look at me. I'm red-faced with rage.
You actually a little bit are. I mean,
I am. I'm going to sit down again. But still, it's the whole thing is just... it's just really, it's a travesty. It's an attack on the language. All right.
So anyway.
Yes. Let's move on to something. Let's move on to something a bit more important and relevant. And that, of course, is the story of the Icelandic teen who called the secret White House phone. Did you hear about this one? This is kind of a crazy story. Vilfil Atlason, a 16-year-old high school student from Iceland. Apparently, you can name 16-year-olds over there. Here, you're not allowed to. Under 18, if you're accused of anything, you have to be anonymous. Anyway, he decided to call the White House, but he could not imagine the publicity it would bring. This is a story that that was on ABC's website. Introducing himself as Ólafur Ragnar Grímsson, who is the actual president of Iceland, Atlason found what he believed to be President George W. Bush's allegedly secret telephone number and phoned requesting a private meeting with him. Can you imagine an Icelandic president needing a private meeting with the American president? What would they discuss exactly?
How in the world did he get this number?
Okay, we're getting to that. I just wanted to talk to him, have a chat, invite him to Iceland and see what he'd say. a White House spokeswoman, Emily Lorimore, that's spelled L-A-W-R-I-M-O-R-E. And the only reason I spell her name was because I've never seen that name spelled like that before. And since we are focusing on spelling and words tonight, I felt it might be entertaining. She insisted that the young man did not dial the private number, but instead dialed 202-456-1414. And we all know that number as the main switchboard for the West Wing. Not the TV show, the actual West Wing. But that, unfortunately, was not the case. The student gave ABC News, reporting this story, the phone number, and it was indeed an extension off. They spelled extension wrong in this story. They spelled it with a T instead of an S. Can you believe that?
Maybe it's something else.
That's not how you... Anyway, it's indeed an extension off the White House switchboard, and it goes to a security command post office in the building next door to the White House. Vilfil's mother, Heinrichsdotter, I'm not going to say that again, I'm sorry, because I probably mangled it. She's a teacher at a local high school. She said her son did, in fact, get through to a private phone. It's interesting, she knows all this. This was not a switchboard number of any kind. It was a secret number at the highest security level. Vilfil claims he was passed on to several people, each of them quizzing him on President Grimson's date of birth, where he grew up, who his parents were, and the date he entered office. I mean, these are things we could find out on Wikipedia pretty easily.
I think that's what he did.
Well, and if you were an Icelandic citizen and you
yes.
and you were still in high school, you probably would have had to memorize these sorts of
now,
things.
Now, wait a second. If the president of Iceland does call...
Mm-hmm. He has to answer these
questions. He has to tell the people his date of birth. That's sort of not very...
Well, I'm sure George W. Bush has to tell his date of birth whenever he requests a phone call to somebody. I'd ask if you called me.
This is the United States. This is how we treat people from other countries.
Exactly, and including presidents.
I would be curious how the White House staff got that information. I mean, they were probably sitting on Wikipedia.
Well,
I'm sure that they have a list of everybody's birth dates that might call. Anyway, he says it was like passing through checkpoints. But, yeah, you're right. Oh, you read the story. I had Wikipedia and a few other sites open, so it was not so difficult, really. When he finally got through to President Bush's secretary... Vilfil alleges he was told to expect a call back from Bush. You know, it's not hard to get through to the secretary. It really isn't. I called Reagan's secretary once. Anyway, she told me the president was not available at the time. That's what they do. They tell you that. But that she would mark it on his schedule to call me back on Monday evening. Instead, the police showed up at his house in Akranes, which is a fishing town about 48 kilometers from Reykjavik, and took him to the local police station where they questioned him for several hours. The police chief said they were under orders from U.S. officials to, quote-unquote, find the leak, that I had to tell them where I'd found the number. Otherwise, I would be banned from ever entering the United States.
You know, that's not a threat to a lot of people.
No, it really isn't.
Sorry, I had the world's smallest violin playing for him. Yeah.
He says that he can't remember where he got the number. I just know I've had it for a few years. I must have gotten it from a friend when I was about 11 or 12. That's where we all get these numbers. His mother continued to defend him. He's very resourceful, you know. He's become a bit of a hero in Iceland. Bush is very unpopular here. It's not hard to become a hero just by calling the White House. He was eventually released into his parents' custody. No charges have been brought against the high school student. Turned out to be the Secret Service Uniform Division, which handles security for the president. If the number were not top secret, the kid asked, why would the police have told me that I would be put on a no-fly list to America? Well, I can answer that. You can be put on that no-fly list for almost any reason, so it's not really that that hard.
I don't really understand how anyone can expect a phone number to be a top secret, like, security.
Yeah, I mean, what if you accidentally dialed it? I mean, or heaven forbid that you dialed several numbers around other numbers that you saw off of a business card, perhaps. That might be illegal. I'm not sure.
Uh-huh. We used to call all kinds of numbers back in the 80s that allegedly went to secret command posts. And there was one we called. I forget exactly how they answered the phone, but they would answer. I know how they did it. They would say signal. You call this 800 number, and this was before 800 numbers revealed who was calling them. So you could call an 800 number with relative safety and not have to worry about being traced back. And what happened was that this military-sounding person would pick up and say signal. Then he'd hang up the phone. Then you'd hear somebody else pick up another phone, say signal as well, and then hang up and a third person. They were always three different people, always three different phones picking up. It was the weirdest thing ever. And then what happened was, and I don't know how they did this back then, if you would get a dial tone. Actually, no, what happened was your phone would ring and a dial tone would be there, and it would be a distant dial tone. And this was well before caller ID existed that they were able to do this. So if anybody knows the secret of signal way back in the 80s, I'd like to know more about that. Don't people call funny phone numbers anymore? We used to do that all the time.
I have a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
So maybe nobody wants to talk about that.
Well, something else that's fading away, payphones. This is kind of interesting. There's an article in Newsday over the past week about how there are only four walk-in payphone booths, that is, left in Manhattan. Only four.
I didn't know there were as many as four.
Yeah. They're all on West End Avenue, by the way. So if you fancy a trip, there's one on 101st Street. I'm not sure where the other three are. And this is something else that was a direct result of this story. There was a rotary payphone at the D'Agostino supermarket in Murray Hill, and it still functioned, except nobody was ever using it. And as soon as the story came out, or as soon as another story similar to this one came out, Verizon came and took it away, so it doesn't exist anymore. But there was, I find it amazing that up until very recently, there was actually a rotary payphone in service in New York City.
I've seen one outside of New York City, but I don't exactly remember where it is.
Well, it's not in the city, though. It's probably in the sticks someplace, right?
Well, it wasn't in the sticks, but, I mean, it was in a city. It just wasn't in New York City.
I'd like to know how many people still use rotary phones. You do? Okay, tell us all about it.
I have a rotary phone in my house.
But do you use it?
It's in a guest room, but it works.
So you force your guests to use it when they come over?
Yes.
All right. Is it a rotary phone or is it a push-button phone that pulses out?
No, it's a rotary, real rotary phone from my grandmother's house.
Okay, good. But what I'm getting at here, you have a touch-tone phone in addition for that same line.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so what I'm looking for is somebody who only uses a rotary phone. I'm sure a lot of our listeners do, but I'd like to hear from them.
They used to charge for touch-tone in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And so my grandmother's house, the reason that I got the rotary phone is before she moved out, she really did, 3 years ago, have a rotary phone. And no, I guess she did have a touch-tone cordless phone, but she did not pay them for touch-tone ever.
Neither.
In her life.
Never, ever, ever did she pay for touch-tone. Okay. This basically is coming about as a result of AT&T's announcement that they're getting out of the payphone business by the end of 2008. Now, I understand Bell South already did this. This is kind of confusing because Bell South is now AT&T, right?
Yeah, but Bell South has been out of the payphone business for quite some time.
Okay.
You still find the phones with the coin boxes that say Bell South on them, but they're very, very few of them I've ever seen are still Bell South phones.
Okay, but it seemed like AT&T had already done this because Bell South turned into AT&T. They were out of the payphone business, and now AT&T is getting out of it, so I guess it's kind of a trend. But when's the last time anyone here used a payphone?
I used one a couple of weeks ago.
Tell us all about that.
It was a Cocotte, and I needed to call an 800 number, and so I used it.
So that payphone derived no benefit from you using it.
That's right. It's unfortunate that they were deprived of any revenue, but that's the rules.
Mm-hmm.
I did. I used one a couple of weeks ago to see. I was just curious to see if the TTY drawer would pop out or not.
Right.
And it didn't. I called a valid TTY number, and it didn't work. Which
did, did you try 800-855-1155?
No, but I'll try that one next time.
That's a pretty good. That one always works, assuming the TTY works.
Well, they have to say hello. Apparently, somebody has to type hello back.
They have to say all kinds of things. They have to transcribe whatever you're saying.
No. This is just if you go up to a payphone that has one, the person on the other end or the machine on the other end has to type hello for the drawer to pop.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's not true.
Oh well, I don't know. That's what this one said.
It just hears the carrier tone, and then as soon as it detects the carrier tone on the other end, it trips a solenoid and a motor that pushes the drawer out.
Well, it didn't. Let's just put it this way. I tried two at the Atlanta airport, and it did not work. I was bored during a flight delay.
Well, try that other number.
Okay.
I mean, that's where people tend to use payphones more, is in airports where they're held captive someplace, and they might not get cell phone signal, they might want to pay huge roaming fees or something like that. And it's interesting to see these huge banks. If you go to Port Authority Bus Terminal, you'll see huge banks of payphones that just go on forever. And it's they're not being used. They're not being used by anybody.
Oh, even at the airports, they're stripped out a lot. I mean, they've stripped down a lot of them to where maybe where there used to be 10 or 15, there's like two.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing that often in the subway, too, which is the one place you really need them.
Well, it seems to me that in New York City, and maybe I'm completely wrong on this, but even the payphones you see, I think the reason that Verizon still keeps those around in the city, they're not making money off of the phones. They're making money off of the advertisements on the outside of the phone booth.
And that's really the only reason these things have stuck around for so long, is because of the advertising that's on the side of the phones. It's really kind of weird. But payphone advertising is $62 million a year business in New York City. And
that's a lot of quarters.
It has nothing to do with the quarters. It has to do with paying for the space. Payphones, by the way, 35,000 payphones in New York City 12 years ago. Today, 22,697.
And I wonder how many actual calls out of those. Because I bet you that there's payphones today on street corners here, and they don't get a phone call for a 24-hour period. You just don't see people, using them. I mean, unless they're, I don't know. I mean, I just don't see people using them. I mean, I'm not here all the time, but.
It's interesting. The story had a headline in Newsday called Hanging Up on Payphones. And then later on in the day, somebody must have gotten angry because they changed the headline. The exact same story now reads Payphones Pay Off in New York City. Exact opposite sentiment. So I think Verizon has a lot of pull over at Newsday to change the whole outlook there. Here's another hacker story. Evil hackers doing something bad. The Oak Ridge National Laboratory revealed on Thursday that a sophisticated cyber attack over the last few weeks may have allowed personal information about thousands of lab visitors to be stolen. The assault appeared to be part of a coordinated attempt to gain access to computer networks at numerous laboratories and other institutions across the country. Lab Director Tom Mason said this in a memo to the 4,200 employees at the Department of Energy facility. Oak Ridge officials would not identify the other institutions affected by the breach, but they said hackers may have infiltrated a database of names, social security numbers, and birth dates of every lab visitor between 1990 and 2004. There was no classified data of any kind compromised, the lab spokesman said. There are people who think that because they accessed this database, that they had access to the lab supercomputer. That is not the case. There was no access at all.
You have to give your social security number just to visit?
You have to give your social security number for just about everything these days. But, again, this is an example of just poor security being taken advantage of by who knows who, and hackers taking the blame for that. Unreal. Every year we build bigger and more sophisticated fences around our databases, and every year our enemies find new and more sophisticated ways to tunnel under the fence, they say. This is an ongoing challenge that is going to be there as far as we can see in the future. I don't get that.
You know, if the enemies are tunneling under the fence, then making the fence taller might not help so much.
No, definitely not. And also, having private information kept on a machine that can be accessed by people that really have... Why do you need to have this information there, accessible to people from the outside world in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, why do you have to have your visitor computer tied in to the Internet at all, period?
Mm-hmm. Doesn't make any sense.
WBAI's visitor computer is on the internet.
Yeah, and you'll know that I didn't give them my Social Security number or a lot of other information. Yes. Okay, what else? We have this rather interesting press release that we got about, a law enforcement, this is from the Law Enforcement Associates Corporation, known as LEA. They're the largest U.S. developer and manufacturer of undercover surveillance equipment. And a couple of days ago, they announced that they received an order from a state police department in the Midwest for more than $120,000 in electronic surveillance products. The devices will be used for covert operations within the customer's undercover units. Due to officer safety concerns, details about the customer and the purchased products will not be disclosed. I don't even know what the point of having a press release is if they can't reveal what they're selling and who they're selling it to, but this is what they try and say in the whole thing. We've introduced a broad range of new surveillance products during 2007, and these devices are gaining significant momentum within our target markets. This contract is one of many multi-product order prospects our sales team has been pursuing, and we are optimistic that we will convert additional opportunities into firm orders in the current and coming quarters.
This person should run for office because they didn't say anything.
I know. It's incredible. Go ahead, Bernie.
What this company, LEA, Law Enforcement Associates, is best known for is what are known in the surveillance field as body wires or covertly worn audio transmitters for undercover stings and that sort of thing. So even $120,000 may not sound like a lot of money. It probably buys a few hundred of those devices, or maybe not even a few hundred. They're kind of expensive. But I think the safety issues they're worried about is if people knew what state police agency was using them and what products they were, the bad guys could use counter-surveillance equipment to pick up the signals that they emit and say, aha, you're an undercover narc, and see you later.
Bernie, I've looked at some of these magazines, and I think you've pointed some of them out to me and get them in the mail. But, I mean, a lot of the devices that companies like to sell look really, really cheesy, and they're using pretty, I don't know, rudimentary technology for really high prices. I mean,
some of them are, but some of these, LEA actually makes some pretty good equipment from some catalogs I've seen. Their catalogs are actually very tightly controlled as well. But in any case, surface mount stuff, and now they're using digital frequency hopping spread spectrum body mics to make them more difficult to intercept. So it's government contracts.
Yeah, there was a police department in the Atlanta area that it was later determined that their body mics were on an international marine frequency, that anybody who went to Radio Shack and bought a marine radio for $200 could listen to.
Brilliant.
Yeah, that was a winner.
Okay, we have an update on something that we featured last week. I'll let her say the words.
Welcome to Copilot Live.
Okay, that is our friend Emma Clark, who we featured.
Not again.
Yeah, Emma Clark is back. She's gotten rehired, apparently. We talked about her last week being fired from the London Underground for saying things to the media that apparently they didn't like. She, of course, spoke the immortal words, mind the gap, to millions of commuters every day. Now she works for Copilot Live 7, apparently. I'm not sure if that's Copilot Live 7. That sounds like a helicopter, but I think this is a one of those GPS navigator things for cars, where you basically give various directions to the driver.
Take 9th exit at roundabout.
Yeah, something like that. but she's recorded a bunch of bits for that, but she's maintained her sense of humor, and she has a lot of spoof ones for this as well. Let's listen to one of them.
Attention. Fixed automatic safety camera.
Okay, well, you know, actually, that wasn't a joke. That's real. Apparently, cars over there in England can tell you when there's a camera coming up. When there's a red light camera or a speed camera or something like that.
My understanding is in England, that's all the time.
What's no, on? No.
A camera coming up.
Yeah, well, it's quite a bit, but what they there's actually a whole big database of the locations of these cameras.
Okay.
And in Garmin speak, they're called points of interest. And you can load them, and it will say, okay, if you're going 70 miles an hour as you approach this one, then it'll pop up, because I don't believe you can use radar detectors there.
There's also a rule that says that such cameras have to be displayed. You have to have a sign saying speed camera ahead. So I don't think you'd ever see that in this country, but in England,
yeah, they have these cool little signs, mm-hmm. and the sign is actually a camera with a bellows, like an old-timey camera with a bellows on it, with the accordion thing,
uh-huh.
and that's what the sign looks like. It's kind of humorous.
Interesting. Well, speaking of kind of humorous...
Are we there yet? 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 Are we there yet?
Yeah, imagine that popping up out of your navigator, or perhaps this.
If you hadn't bought such a cheap car, you could have caught up with him.
Okay. And,
Emmanuel?
Yes, Bernie.
Jens and I, on Sunday, were heading over to Brooklyn to visit with Jim, who we'll talk about in a moment.
Yes.
I used a GPS navigator. I think it was made by a company called Mio. And... every time we'd miss a turn, which was frequently because we had to go through all these circular, it was crazy. We probably had to take about 100 turns to get from Fort Lee, New Jersey to this place in Brooklyn. And every time you'd miss a turn, it would say it was recalculating, and it was in this Australian butler sounding voice. But we were joking that there should be different voices and different demeanors, like a berating demeanor, like, how could you have missed that turn? That sort of thing. And we're having fun.
The one in Hertz rental car, she sounds very disappointed with you when you miss a turn. It's like recalculating route.
No, I know this voice well. That's never lost lady. Calculating route. And I can't stand it because half the time she tells you, please proceed to the highlighted route. That's her job to tell me how to get to the highlighted route. What she does is she puts me on some road that doesn't connect to the other road, and then I've got to figure it out myself, and she won't help.
That was probably one of the worst voice prompting systems that I've ever heard. I mean, there were instructions like, make a right, then followed by a keep to the left.
Yeah.
That was like one of the funniest ones.
She's got the grammar a little wrong, but yeah, you're right. Somehow they don't seem to be able to tie in the right phrasing.
Can I give you a GPS rental car nightmare?
Oh, I'd love one.
Returned a rental car in Florida. And just found out this week that I was charged $399 by, can I name the company?
Yeah, go ahead.
Alamo Rent-A-Car.
Okay.
For a GPS that I gave them back. So we're, me, my credit card company, and them are battling currently.
They claim that the navigator system is no longer in the car.
No, they use a Garmin external one, and they give you a little baggie with it in it.
Okay.
And then you plug it into the cigarette lighter, and you pop it in there, and,
uh-huh.
and they say I didn't give it back to them.
And you say you did.
And I sure is did.
Well, okay. Well, keep us
so
updated.
I'll keep you updated on that. I have a phone call into the regional VP, so we'll see what happens
All
with
right.
that.
And here's Emma Clark with another announcement.
I bet Kit off Knight Rider never had this trouble.
I like to just sort of throw those in randomly just to really mess with people's heads. They are fun. GPS units, though, you tend to sort of get too used to them, and then you can't get anywhere without one of them. So speaking of GPS, and what officials are calling a first for the LAPD, detectives on Tuesday said they got a crucial and immediate break in a slaying case by using a global positioning satellite system that was tracking the movements of gang members. As part of a new state crackdown on gangs, authorities last month tagged some gang members with monitoring bracelets as a condition of their parole from prison. The bracelets keep a running log of where the 20 gang members are, including time-stamped mapping. They say the system paid off Monday night after a fatal shooting. As soon as the radio call went out reporting the drive-by shooting, Sergeant Ruby Malachi had an idea. He runs the LAPD's Crime Analysis Center below City Hall East. I'm sorry, it's a she. And she directed her officers to punch in the date, time, and location into the computer tracking the movements of the 20 gang members. She noticed that one of the gang members was at the address where the shooting occurred. At the scene, witnesses say they saw seven people in a black SUV from which the shots were fired. A police helicopter tracked the gang members' GPS trail to Compton and found the black SUV. So this is being heralded as a great victory in GPS technology and people tracking. LAPD Deputy Chief Kenneth Gardner says it's futuristic, it's real-time, it's almost a scene out of Minority Report, referring to the Steven Spielberg movie that delves into the future of law enforcement. And I think this is something we're going to be seeing a whole lot more of, and I'm kind of scared of this.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, okay, first of all, this has to go on, like, the top 10 stupidest criminals list of doing committing a crime while wearing a GPS bracelet.
Right.
While on parole or out of prison on bail or whatever he was, but I mean, there's a privacy issue with having this thing on, but I guess if you don't want to take the parole and take the deal, then you can stay in jail, but but it comes down to, that's really stupid.
Yeah, well, of course, there were seven people in the SUV, so who knows, maybe he just was hitching a ride or something, and the big coincidence, but probably not. All right. Then we have this case of, and this is of course continuing to be disturbing because we've talked about this before. The New York City Police Department, NYPD, is being slapped with a lawsuit after detaining a graduate student who was taking pictures near a subway station in Upper Manhattan. The New York Civil Liberties Union says Arun Witta was taking pictures outside the 207th Street subway stop on the number one train in July, when a police officer got suspicious, handcuffed him, and detained him for half an hour. Witta says he was taking photos for a personal project chronicling the city's subway stops. I was definitely embarrassed. It was definitely humiliating to be standing on a street corner. Obviously, people were staring at me thinking, why is that guy in cuffs? Sounds like the story we read last week about the person who picked up the lost wallet and was cuffed or questioned on the subway station by cops. Witta says initially the police did not tell him why he was being stopped or handcuffed. He says the officer checked his ID and told him he may have to issue him a ticket. Eventually, two plainclothes officers showed up on the scene, questioned him, and looked through the pictures on his camera before letting him go. He says the only explanation he received at the time was that the NYPD has to be extra careful these days. Witta, who is half Indian, says he has no doubt his skin color played a role in the incident. I definitely know secondhand many other people who have taken photos in the subway, but have never been subjected to this kind of treatment that happened to me. I don't have a doubt that if I looked different, this wouldn't have happened. The NYCLU says the police violated Witta's constitutional rights and has filed a lawsuit on Witta's behalf. But, you know, a lot of us who take pictures do get harassed by cops or security guards who seem to have some idea that this is illegal, that it's not permitted to take pictures of trains or train stations anymore.
It is.
Police even seem to think that.
That's what I'm talking about. The police.
I had a New Jersey Transit officer tell me probably 3 or 4 years ago at the Trenton station, I was taking pictures of the transit fare instrument machines, and he started yelling at me and said he was going to confiscate the camera, and he said there's some law. I said, well, what is the law? And I had him call in his supervisor, and his supervisor said to him on the radio, and I heard this, well, we know there's a law. It's just not printed anywhere.
Typical. Very typical. Okay, our phone number is 212-209-2900. I'd like to take as many phone calls as we possibly can tonight because we always seem to run out of time, we know we have a lot of people out there. Again, if you have a rotary phone, we'd sure like to hear from you because we like to know how many people out there still use the things and have them as their primary means of communication.
The problem is our phone number has so many nines and zeros in it, the rotary people will take a long time to dial. Well, you know, they might not be able to get
Start dialing now. All right. Here's some letters from our listeners who write to us at oth@2600.com. You were talking about RFID credit cards on your show, which got me thinking. I have two RFID cards that I use regularly. One is for the gate at my apartment complex. The other is for access to RFID-controlled doors at work. I've tried putting both cards in my wallet for convenience. Though when I tried this, I couldn't open the gate or the doors at work. Well, having two RFID cards together scrambled the signal. If that is so, you could have your passport, RFID credit cards, and gate key, as it were, in the same pocket and not have to worry about people picking up a clear transmission of any of these items. I could be way off. I haven't researched RFID in a very much in depth, so correct me if I'm wrong, but is this a feasible theory, signed Dr. Lecter?
Yeah, but a more reliable theory is to just keep it shielded. If the two tags are on the same frequency and they're not designed for and the protocol that they're using isn't designed for multiple use, then yeah, they're going to collide and you're not going to get an accurate reading. But a more reliable way to do that is to actually shield the wallet.
Okay.
Or purchase one.
But obviously that will help. But I think what he was asking was, is it possible to confuse these signals? Do they have to be the exact same frequency? Or
yeah, if he had a UHF tag and an HF tag, then it's probably going to work just fine and there won't be a difference. But if he has two tags that are on the same frequency range, then yeah, if they're going to collide, they're not going to work properly.
Okay, again, our phone number 212-209-2900. We'll go to the phones in just a couple of minutes. This is an interesting letter that we received from somebody. Who is glad that he has such a long drive to work every day because he listens to our show on his commute back and forth. The reason I'm writing this is because of a flaw I discovered while working as an agent for Altel Wireless. It began when I borrowed a used phone from my ex-wife, who wasn't my ex at the time, to make some adjustments to my account. Before I was able to get the changes made, a few days had passed and I had left the borrowed phone on. She had since received a new one, and the voice service was working on her new handset. When I finally got around to switching the ESN to my old phone, I noticed that the phone in my absence had received some new texts. I thought it was odd, so I opened it up and read the inbox, about 10 messages from her friends. I knew there weren't any messages on the phone. She was good about trying to cover her tracks. I thought this was really odd because the messages were all dated after I had received the phone from her, so I decided to test the phone. I sent her a message from my working handset, and sure enough, it came to the old phone. But minutes later, I received a message back from her in response to my text. I thought this tapping into the network with just a phone that had at one time been activated on the account was odd. So I tried it with my phone. I reprogrammed the old phone with my information and sent her a message back. And sure enough, when my working handset received the message, so did the phone that had never been on my account. I've tried it a few times since, and it's worked almost every time. So apparently, all you have to know is how to program a phone and the number you want to eavesdrop on, and you're golden. I talked to my agent about it, and she directed me to call tech support. I just wanted to know why the phones would still receive texts when they weren't registered on the system. He told me that they knew that it could be done, and to tell the customers to keep the old handsets off or return them to me for disposal. I found this very odd considering how much communication happens via text messaging these days, and I wonder if other cell phone companies have this same flaw in their system. Thanks, Dan, for writing in. Very interesting potential flaw there.
There's a clue here,
uh-huh.
And that is to his question, and that is Altel is a CDMA carrier, uses CDMA technology, and both Verizon and Sprint PCS also use CDMA. In fact, Altel is one of these rural carriers that sets up cell sites to sort of snag Verizon and Sprint customers who are out of the area, and then they generate revenue that way for themselves by charging Sprint and Verizon for roaming. But getting back to that, it would be worth some of our listeners to try this if they have Sprint or Verizon handsets. But what you'd have to know the master subscriber lock code for that handset, so that you could change the phone number of the handset. You wouldn't be changing the electronic serial number, just the phone number. Or if you upgraded a handset from one to the other, the old one would still have the old number in it, like in this gentleman's situation. So it's worth trying. I don't think it would work with a GSM carrier, but it might work with Sprint or Verizon as well.
It sounds to me like, and I don't know the details about Altel. I mean, I see they provide service in outlying areas, but not in the area that I live. And it sounds to me like they're giving some information away, or he got a hold of some that piece of information that you're talking about. But I don't think that Verizon or Sprint give you that.
I have had them give it to me before. Just okay. If you're out of a contract, they'll you can sort of social engineer it out of them. They're sort of loath to give it up to you while you're still on the contract because they don't want you to use that phone on another CDMA carrier. But you can get it, and sometimes you can find it online, so forth.
I just was trying to get the letter, because I thought the writer said he worked for Altel.
Well, yeah, obviously, because he had customers, so I'm pretty sure that...
he can get access to all kinds of things.
Right,
if
he worked
you
as an
for
agent
them.
For Altel Wireless.
Yeah, it sounds like that he's like a reseller, because I don't know that Altel has like their own back corporate stores like AT&T and Singular would. It would be like one of these little shops around here where they, you know, they sell service from a bunch of different providers.
Okay, let's take some phone calls. 212-209-2900. First, let's have our last announcement from Emma Clark.
When exactly did you pass your test?
Okay, that's for the GPS navigator. Actually, I was the second to last one. We'll get to the last one in a little bit. Let's take a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, how you doing, Manuel?
What's on your mind?
I have a question for you. A strange thing happened to me. I use my cell phone for business and personal use, and I found out I called one of my clients on the landline and, you know, told them to write me a check or whatever, and they send me a check, and it's a completely other person's name, and I called them back, and they got the name off of the caller ID, and it's not even my name. It's some completely other person's name. It's my cell phone coming up on their caller ID to the landline. And so I call Verizon.
Mm-hmm.
They've never even heard of such a thing happening. And so they sent out what they called a trouble ticket. And it still hasn't done anything because it's still happening. And I figured it might have been because I know different states use different ones. So I called friends in New Jersey, and the same thing happens. It comes up with the same name.
Okay, so probably what happened, how long have you had the cell phone?
Maybe 10 years. With the same.
Oh, 10 years. Okay.
Yeah.
That's different. I don't know. I was going to say that probably somebody had your number beforehand, and you simply got their name.
Right.
Is it an unusual name or something?
Well, here's the weird part. The name that's coming up is a dear friend of mine that I've grown up with, you know, since kindergarten.
Okay, it's kind of spooky then. This is like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah.
I don't know why something like that might happen unless, is it possible that somehow a representative got confused when you called them and mentioned your friend's name or your friend used your phone?
Yeah, none of that ever happened. He's never used my phone, and he lives in a different state, and he's been living in separate states for, you know, a couple of years now, but...
How well do you know this person? Is it possible that that he actually has nefarious purposes and has gone into your account and added his name somehow?
Absolutely not. Yeah, I know him. You know, we're dear friends. We grew up together.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that's the weirdest part, is that I can't imagine how out of all the things in the world that his name would come up. And, you know, and plus that's the thing, is the name on my account is the same. It's the same credit card, the same
right.
Everything about my account. Nothing's changed. So I don't, even if he did do that, you know, he doesn't use my number or his phone. He has
without giving out specific information, is his name unique enough that you know that it's his name? It's not just something like, you know.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, that tells me that it's something personal, and somebody you know is responsible for this somehow, maybe a practical jokester or something somehow. It's weird. It's bizarre. I've never heard of anything like this. Does anybody have any theories here?
Did you get your phone in the same room as him, you know, 10 years ago?
No.
Huh.
No, because he's a little bit younger. So when I went to college and stuff, he was still in high school, and that's when I moved away, and that's when I got the cell phone in New York.
Has your number ever shown up with the right name?
I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming because, you know, a lot of people that call them cell phones, they just save my name as their number. So it's not like a landline caller ID.
Right.
You know? So, And the other thing, too, is I want to know how to fix it, and they had no idea. And I don't know who controls the landline, like that kind of database that has, like, that saves the names of people, I don't know, like the cell phone, you know?
Well, the phone companies like Verizon, AT&T, they contribute, and they have databases. I'm not exactly sure who it is that runs them. I think they all kind of run them, don't they?
The phone companies should be able to fix it, I think.
Yeah, they should be able to fix it, but I'm more curious how it happened.
Yeah.
I think it's more of a mystery. Have you ever changed your cell phone company?
No, I've never changed companies. I've had the same number. You know?
May we ask what your cell phone company is?
It's Verizon.
Verizon. Okay. Yeah. And is this your only cell phone?
Yeah. Yep.
Weird. Have you ever shared anything, a phone or any kind of utility with this other person?
Never.
All right. Well, you've given us something to think about. I'm sure we'll get some mail on this, and we'll read it in future weeks, and hopefully somebody can figure out just what happened.
And if I find out anything, I'll let you guys know, definitely.
Yeah, please, because we're going to be up nights worrying about this. This is unusual.
Hopefully they'll fix it for you.
Yeah, well, fixing it is easy. That's the easy part, but I'd really want to know how that happened. But that's a mystery for sure. Okay, shall we take another phone call? Good evening. No, okay, they've left. Let's go over here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Oh, how you doing?
What's up?
I was wondering if you could tell me, you mentioned shielding your wallet when you have those cards in there. What's the best way to, like, shield a wallet or a purse? And also, if you could tell me a good website that I could get a young boy interested in, like, cell phone tricks and stuff like that.
Okay, I'm going to ignore that second question.
Yeah, we were a little worried there for a second, and now I know what I think that you're asking.
I'm still worried about the
first one, but all right. I would. What is the guy that came and gave the premiums?
It's Dieferware. The RFID shielding wallets that you can actually purchase are from a company named Dieferware. And that's RFID spelled
D-I-F-R-W-E-A-R.
Yeah, right. Because if you start wrapping your credit cards up in tinfoil, people are going to think that you might, you know, need to go to the rubber room and stuff. I mean, you know, it'll work, but
if you paint the tinfoil a different color, they don't know it's tinfoil. What? It's tinfoil paint. You don't know about this?
Oh, that's what's coming out from under your hat. I'm sorry.
You think I'd walk around unprotected?
What do you think my hat's made out of?
Oh, yeah, it is.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow. I'm the only one in the room with, yeah, okay.
But you can effectively shield them with a couple of layers of aluminum foil, and it'll work just fine.
All right.
And if you have any of those ESD static bags that computer circuit boards are and sub-assemblies are packed in, they're sort of like this gray silvery. If you double bag it in that stuff, that'll shield it as well.
All right, let's take another phone call. 212-209-2900. We have a couple of open lines. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah.
What's on your mind?
Oh, how you doing? How you doing, fellas?
What's up?
Everybody all right?
Yeah, we're fine.
Oh, yeah, we're good.
What's going on?
So that guy who called earlier about the name showing up on his phone,
mm-hmm.
I would check my credit if I was him.
Well, I imagine he probably has. He probably is aware of something, if anything else weird is going on.
Yeah, that's one of the first steps I would take because...
I mean, here's the thing. How would you even know if your name wasn't right on someone else's caller ID unless they told you?
Exactly, and it's perfect
mm-hmm.
because you wouldn't know. And that's too much of a coincidence, especially if the guy's name, like you asked the question, is it an uncommon name?
Uh-huh.
If a common name is one thing, but if it's an uncommon name and it belongs to his friend who lives in another state,
mm-hmm.
that's a huge coincidence. I would start looking for some kind of identity theft there, if I was him.
That sounds like reverse identity theft to me. I mean, usually one person is trying to make their way into using another person's identity as opposed to changing the other person's name on their accounts to the thief's name. It just seems like the wrong direction to be.
I'm sure there's a practical jokester involved in this somehow because the coincidence is just too weird. But it brings forth an interesting point. You can have an unlisted phone number. You can have your phone billed to you someplace, but the information that tells caller ID what your name is, that's completely different information.
And that can be spoofed.
That can be spoofed, and it can be... it can also be looked up in various ways. If you spoof the number, lots of times the lookup is done and you'll see the name coming from the database, and that's a good way to find out people's unlisted phone numbers. If you simply scan an exchange and get every number to show what name is associated with it, they won't even know. So
it's easier than you think.
It's a lot easier than you think. Okay, second of the phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes, hi. You mentioned about the walk-in telephone booths on Western Avenue.
Yes.
So one of them is on West 66th Street.
Oh, really?
You know that.
West 66th and West End Avenue.
It's my neighbor. I see it all the time.
Really? Have you visited it lately?
Yes. I don't use it, but it's a walk-in telephone booth. The kind of Superman would change in. It's definitely there.
Yeah, it's good to just sort of walk in and sort of stand there for a while and see the world go by, even if you don't use the phone.
It's right near ABC also, because
uh-huh.
ABC's on, but it's anyway, it's on 66th and Western Avenue.
Okay, thanks for the tip, and we'll head over there later and go down memory lane. Yeah, old payphone booths.
My school has a couple of them.
Booths, actual booths.
Booths that are built into the wall.
Remember you used to be able to close the door, the sort of accordionist door, and a little fluorescent light would come on, and sometimes a fan would go on, too. Bernie, I know you remember these things.
Yeah, it was great. It was like being your own little cocoon for a while.
And it could be. You could stay in there for a long time and make all sorts of phone calls.
And then you'd get out the bottle cap and the pull tab and the...
This isn't War Games.
So there was a bench in there. Yeah, I mean, you could sit on a bench, and there's like a little surface for writing under the payphone. And you had your fan and your light, and you could get work done in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, many times that served as my office before I actually had one. Okay, a couple of minutes left for phone calls, 212-209-2900. Oh, look, all the lines are lit now. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Oh, hi.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Manhattan.
Okay, well, you're in a very noisy place. What's on your mind?
I just had a comment about the Verizon phone caller who, you know, called in before about having somebody else's name come up. I had the same experience.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
And was it somebody you knew?
No, nobody I knew.
And what was the explanation, or did you never get one?
No, I have no explanation at all, and it only comes up on certain phones, not others. Some friends, the phone, my name comes up, and other friends' phones, an Asian woman's name comes up.
Now, are the friends whose this other number comes up on, are they landline phones, and then your friends who your name comes on? They're all cell phones.
Yeah.
Well, okay, caller ID is not transmitted on cell phones. You define the name on the cell phone. In other words, if somebody calls you, you're the one that says who they are. You don't get the name sent to your cell phone. Do you understand?
Yeah, but when I call certain people, my name comes up.
Uh-huh.
And then when I call certain other people, only two people, an Asian woman's name comes up.
Okay, but if they're using cell phones, they're the ones that have defined your number as the Asian woman, is what I'm trying to tell you.
If they're using a landline, then it's something strange happening. So, in other words, if you have a cell phone, if a person has a cell phone and they program in a number to come up with Lily, for example, it's going to come up Lily no matter who the name in the database is, because it doesn't actually go and look up the name in the database.
No, I'm telling you, it comes up a different name, totally.
Okay,
different name.
But what we're telling you is that if you have a cell phone, you define that name yourself. The person getting called, you can say everybody calling you is named President Bush. You can say that, and it'll show up every time they call. You cannot do that on a landline because a landline actually receives data that looks up a name and matches it to the phone number. We kind of out of time now, so that's it for the phone calls this week. But I want to thank everybody for calling in and for giving us all sorts of interesting questions and things to think about. And we'll be back again next week with another edition of Off the Hook, where all sorts of things will be discussed and debated and revealed for maybe the first time.
That's why the universe sent me today.
Also, our email address, oth@2600.com, and tune in again next week at this exact same time, and we'll have another exciting edition. Meantime, tune in for the Personal Computer Show coming up in just a couple of minutes here on WBAI. Good night.
Forever rolling through the fire, ever burning, I'd be lost without a trace. All my youthful optimism has been somberly replaced. See the nature of my limits, see the brown up on my face. Blood is hard for me to smile when the devil is giving chase. See the lethal of the evil, always headed to attack. Pearl Harbor in their spirit, so I never turn my back. All my days in the jungle got me ready to collapse. Got a bite from every angle, cause the brother's feeling trapped. Gladiator terminators keep my circle on the run. Starvation of the nation, got us killing for the grunt. This is do or die, take it for the children of the sun. The whole generation is living by the gun. Demolition, coalitions, every room is through the town. No escaping, so I'm feeling like a shackle to the ground. Barbaric institutions trying to keep a nigga down. But you can't stop my lightning from shining through the clouds. Heavy charging like a rifle, impact, full speed. Steady looking, warm with death, just knock him on his knees. From the ashes of the fire, from a crew of Bronx Street. Shadow boxing, evil spirits, till our skin starts to bleed. Full throttle, never wobble, gotta hit it full thrust. When I'm trapped in the corner, standing tall, it's a must. Yeah, I'm caught up in the clutch. It's so amazing that I'm swimming in the outland, floating in the quicksand, still got the will to survive. It's so amazing that I'm living on a high note, dancing on a tight rope, never really breaking my stride. It's so amazing that I'm living out my fantasy, ties every casualty, blood full of African pride. It's so amazing that I'm reaching for the mountaintop, Bronx down, Camelot, repetition the day that I die. I run the distance as the sun, just escaping all my demons. Times are never changing with the coming of the seasons. Current situation makes it difficult for breathing. Only thing I can't believe in. Angels of the Reaper ever lurking in the distance. Stand up on the mountain like a tower of resistance. Everything I cherish, I can lose it in an instant. Like I'm a dude as you, recognize I'm Martin Lynch. Shield my inner vision from the mentally enslaving. Grab my heavy cross and scrape my knuckles on the pavement. Poison the infernal that be raging through my pages. Symbolize the renaissance from the dark ages. Rock
on the tightrope, never really breaking my stride. It's so amazing that I'm living out my fantasy. Lies, death, and casualty, blood for the African pride. It's so amazing that I'm reaching for the mountaintop. From town, Camelot, reppin' to the day that I die.
Now check it out now.
All right, all right. Hey, Kathy.